Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Halloween, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. Welcome to K-12 Education Talk Radio. It's nice to have you with us today. Hope you're all set to not only have a great Halloween, but celebrate that. I'm sorry to St. Louis. I have good friends in St. Louis, but that Red Sox victory was just great. I live in Maine. The Red Sox are the New England team, and we're thrilled that they took the World Series last night. But we're going to be talking about education here today on Education Talk Radio. As we always do, we've got the National Council of Teachers of English. We're going to talk about formative assessment and all the wonderful things they're doing with there and how formative assessment can improve learning. We've got Scott and Kathy with us. They'll be going in just a second. I want to make sure everybody knows that we're going to archive the show at our website, education-talkradio.org, and we have our schedule over there, et cetera. And we're going to tweet everything out at EduTalkRadio, at EduTalkRadio. Please follow us over there. And by the way, NCTE is ncte.org, and also they tweet at NCTE if you want to follow them as well. I got to thank our good friends over at Heinemann Publishing for sponsoring today's show. We're thrilled to have them continually do that, and we love them as a sponsor and a good friend. Heinemann Publishing offers proven, reliable resources for today's instructional challenges by some of the world's best education thought leaders. We go down a whole list that's just absolutely incredible, and we have them on the show a lot. Looking forward to doing the same in 2014. Heinemann's resources for leveled literacy intervention, benchmark assessment, classroom materials, professional books, and professional development services literally transform teaching and lead to powerful learning. For the best in educational publishing and the best in educational professional development, please check out Heinemann.com today. Heinemann spelled with two N's, H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N.com. They're located in beautiful Portsmouth, New Hampshire, just about an hour south of me. But you don't have to go to Portsmouth, although I would highly recommend it, but just go over to Heinemann.com. You get a wealth of information. They will probably be at the NCTE show, okay, coming up in another month in magnificent Boston, in case I didn't mention it, home of the Red Sox. Lucky you guys for being able to come to the home of the World Series champions. Is that right, Kathy? I know how excited you are.
I am incredibly excited about it because I am a New England girl originally.
Well, where are you from, young lady?
Spent a lot of my growing up years in Cape Cod, and then I went to college in Connecticut. So I was watching last night, and I'm really excited.
You're there. You're there. And then there's poor Scott, Scott Philkins. Scott, you are a New England fan, too, I assume. A Boston Red Sox fan, too. I would obviously assume that, right?
I'm a born and bred Midwesterner.
And so ends Scott's time on the show today. Have a good day, Scott. Enjoy that lovely weather over there. Right, I was just talking. I did an earlier show today with AASL, the American Association for School Librarians, and their new executive director is Sylvia Knight Norton, who just moved from Tallahassee to take the job in Chicago. Now, as I mentioned to her, not to worry, the weather is pretty similar. Right. And Kathy, let me give you a real introduction. Are you Dr. Kathy Fleischer? Are you doctor?
I am indeed.
There you go. I just want to give you the right title here. You heard it. Dr. Kathy Fleischer is a professor at Eastern Michigan University in Ypsilanti, Michigan. I've actually been there, where she co-directs the Writing Project, coordinates a long-standing teacher research group, and co-directs the Family Literacy Initiative. I like that. And is also the author of a book called Reading and Writing in Teens, A Parent's Guide to Adolescent Literacy. Okay, and by the way, she chaired the task force that wrote the formative assessment guideline for NCTE, and Scott, okay, is also involved in that. He is a 6 to 12 English, and they're in a very short hour, Scott, 6 to 12.
I wish. <Right.
laughs> Scott is a grade 6 to 12 English and Social Studies Curriculum Coordinator for beautiful Champaign, Illinois, Unit 4 Schools. Okay, he's co-director of the University of Illinois Writing Project, that's cool, and a former high school English teacher and instructional coach. And we have these long things. You want me to give this? I can't give this whole website here, should I? Just go to www.readwriteforschools.com. think, readwritethink.org, and both Kathy and Scott are listed over there. Was that good enough, guys?
Perfect.
That's great. Yep.
There you go. Okay. Formative. When Millie and I put this show together, she gave me the title. Millie's the maven of English at NCTE. Thank you, Millie, for all that you do. Millie Davis. Formative assessment that truly informs instruction. And I like that, okay, because finally, you know, just the A that or the B or the C that the kid gets, that has to be used for something. So you have to assess people, okay, to make sure that they're learning, which is the bottom line. So let's this is a new position statement from NCTE on formative assessment, and which begs the question, Kathy, what is formative assessment?
So, Larry, formative assessment is really what effective teachers do on a daily basis to check their students' understanding, to try to see who needs help with what, and to adjust their teaching to meet their students' needs. So it might be something like asking kids to write an exit slip on the way out of class that identifies one idea they learned today and one question they had, and then the teacher can go home and look at those and see what happened in class that day. Or it could be something like conferring with a student in the midst of a paper she's writing and asking her questions like, you know, what's going well in this? What do you feel good about? And what challenges are you facing? It could be something like asking kids in the middle of the class to stop for a minute and rate their understanding from 1 to 10 on what you've been trying to teach that day. So those are some examples, but what's key to formative assessment are things like this. It's frequent, it's ongoing, it's systematic, and it's rooted in the instructional activity so that it occurs in the context of everyday classroom life. It's not outside of classroom life. It's part of classroom life. And last, I think it's important to note that formative assessment really focuses on teachers inquiring into what is working and what isn't working for the learners in their classroom, and then making instructional decisions on the basis of that in order to help students. So teacher decision-making is really at the heart of formative assessment.
And when we use the word formative, Kathy, is the word formative for the students or for the teacher?
It's both, right? It's both. It's so the teacher can be forming some ideas of what's going on next, but we really talk a lot about the student's involvement in formative assessment as well. So we're introducing the students to do some self-assessment to see where they are so they can set goals for themselves and think about what comes next.
And, you know, I'll tell you a great story, which, boy, did I miss the boat on this one. In ninth grade, we had to start taking a language. This was 2,000 years ago. There were only three languages in the world at that time. And I was taking Spanish. And my teacher, who was a nice enough lady, Miss Price, she's probably 600 years old now, and she taught conjugation. And a couple of, you know, which is the basis of understanding Spanish, conjugating verbs and all that sort of thing. Sadly, I was thinking about some girl two rows over most of those times. Okay. I'm 13, 14, whatever I was. And the windup of it was, okay, I just figured in my own mind, I could almost see myself saying it, I'll get this later. And, of course, that was the end. Nobody ever bothered to ask me if I understood. Nobody ever gave me a test before we moved on. I became so far behind, so far behind, okay, that I could never catch up because I zoned out on that lesson. And so I'll ask the question. I'll ask you, Scott, because you do English and social studies curriculum in Champaign. Is this a new thing? Or when Miss Price was teaching me back in the Stone Age, such a thing didn't even exist. You were just supposed to move along, et cetera. When did formative assessment come into being as a real thing to inform instruction?
Yeah. I don't think that it's really a new thing at all because, I mean, anytime we think about any learning relationship, if you're trying to help somebody along, you notice what they're doing well and what they're not, and perhaps you try to respond. I think the reason why it's getting so much attention now is because there is an expectation that teachers and students work together to make sure that everyone achieves. If we're going to say that No Child Left Behind has really done anything positively, it's drawn attention to the fact that we do want to improve achievement for all students. So with no offense to your teacher, perhaps just the dominant idea was it's up to the kid. I would think that she noticed that you were not getting conjugation, but she might have been working in a context where you were just supposed to keep moving along.
So I think that's
one of the reasons why I think it's maybe a hotter term is that there is a greater expectation for teachers and students to work together.
And by the way, Scott, I got to tell you, I love that term you just used, learning relationship. In all the shows I've done, nobody's ever used that term before.
Well,
that was a good one.
Thank you.
Right?
Yeah.
So that could be your next book, Scott.
Absolutely. And really, that is kind of
relationship.
The key. That is, I think, key to what we're talking about.
It is.
When we say formative assessment, teachers need to have the freedom to form better constructs of their students as learners. And it really is a two-way relationship.
It's got to be. And that's exactly the same thing. You guys are on the same page, whether you know it or not, that Kathy said a few minutes ago when I asked if the formative word was for teachers or for students. She said both.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
And Larry, I would add, I think it's also for parents. You know, it's also for parents.
That.
Formative
yeah.
assessment really helps parents see where their students are along the way.
Well, but I'm thinking back to you go home from school and your parents ask you, what'd you do in school today? And the correct answer is nothing. Right. So how does a parent get involved? Yeah, you know that. How does a parent get involved?
I mean, so there's all kinds of things
goes
that can
on
happen.
The parent? That's a good question. Go ahead, Kathy,
I think there's all kinds of things that can happen. Scott, you should jump in, too, because I think you have got some good ideas on this one, too. But I think for parents, if teachers are constantly doing these formative assessments, and if students are constantly doing formative assessments, they know where they're standing on certain things as things are going along, before the test, before the thing at the end of the term, before the thing at the end of the unit. And parents can get involved by asking their kids that. Teachers can get involved by informing parents about where kids are along the way so that none of this should be a surprise at the end. One of the things that we, at the end of this assessment, a report, we have a list of ideas. One of the ideas that's listed has to do with student-led conferencing, in which instead of having that sort of normal night where the parent goes in and the teacher says all the stuff about the student, have the student involved with that too. And so the student is kind of leading the way, talking about where he or she is in terms of goals, what she's met, what she hasn't met, what she still wants to work on. So as teachers are working on that in class with students, students become much more articulate about that to be able to talk to the parents as well.
And that's good, and it puts it that particularly puts it into a nice context of the three in there, so the kids can't nudge you off and say nothing, you know, like that sort of thing. It really is good. So Scott, what are we aiming for here? You're the English coordinator. They're teaching Huckleberry Finn. At the end of the story, the teacher asks kids questions. Is that what we're talking about? Is that enough right there? A pop quiz at the end. Where's it go?
Sure. Well. A lot of times, questions at the end of anything are too late, but not necessarily. Really, to me, it comes down to what were the questions, and is there a possibility to do something next, depending on what the answers were. So we need to ask questions that get kids to reveal their thinking. So fact-based questions that are kind of too low level, tend not to give you the kind of information that you can act on. If a kid doesn't know a factual answer, you have no idea why not. Maybe he or she didn't read. Maybe he or she didn't understand. You can't tell. So the questions have to ask something more of the student so the teacher has more to dig into. And I think that gets back to that idea of relationship. We almost have to ask more of our kids in these questions. They have to be willing to give up more of their thinking in order for us to have more to dig into to understand what to do next. And then the next part of that is, can you do something after that? If you have a scripted curriculum or a really tight timeline that says, regardless of what happens, you move on to the next content, teachers may not have
welcome
the flexibility.
Welcome to my Spanish class.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So there has to be that flexibility within the curriculum and the trust for teachers to make decisions that if they have to slow down, it's because they are responding to their students' needs. So probably questions at the end of a novel is too late, but if they're the right questions and there's some freedom to do something afterward, it could be formative. One of the things our report tries to do early on is suggest that the distinction between formative assessment and summative assessment, which is assessment at the end of a unit, that distinction isn't as clear or as stark as maybe we used to make it out to be. It all depends on what the teacher does with the information.
And you know, I'm gonna throw something at you. This is interesting for both of you. One of my oldest friends, Stu Feierstein, is the biology chair. Just was. He's now teaching on loan to Cambridge University. He's a neuroscientist at Columbia University, okay? And he wrote a book called Ignorance, which tries to explore how important ignorance is. That's what actually drives you forward, so to speak. It's not what you know, it's what you don't know that you're constantly going after. That's the basis of the book. So it's what we're ignorant of that drives you forward. There's a little plug for his book, Ignorance, Stuart Feuerstein. But all that besides the point, he did a TED Talk that I watched a couple of weeks ago. And his point was at the end, because you were talking, Scott, about questions. He said, one of the things you can look at doing, as he was talking about education, is that instead of asking the student for the answers, ask him or her, what's the next question? Okay? Which says that what do we need to know next? What's the next step? Where we're going to go? And when we're talking about questions, are answers more important than questions when you're dealing with formative assessment? Professor Fleischer, I'll leave that to you on. I'll leave that to you. Wasn't that brilliant on me? Was that good or what?
That was a really nice connection that you made there.
Yeah, we should have had you on the task force.
Yeah, we should have had you on the task force.
You know? I'll plug the book, Ignorance, Stuart Feuerstein. You guys will love it. A short book, you'll love it, okay?
Yeah, I wrote down TED Talk, too. I'll look that up.
Yeah, yep. my oldest friend. It's on Amazon. But at any rate, he's almost as smart as I am. He's almost, not quite. Okay, so tell me, okay, what's more important, answers or questions when you're dealing with formative assessment?
Well, they're both important, right? Because the answers that kids give you as a teacher help you think through more questions for the kid, right? The student gives answer X. That helps you really think about what did the kid understand? What did the kid miss? What can I do to help that kid? I think that, for me, questions and answers are in kind of a cycle here, that kids' answers should always lead you to more questions. It should lead the kid to more questions. So anything we can design in formative assessment that keeps that cycle going, I think, is pretty important.
Now, what do you think, Scott?
Yeah, and I would just add to that your friend's focus on ignorance, I think, is an interesting one. It's all about the teacher's and the student's stance toward it, right? Mm-hmm. If you see ignorance as a problem or a deficit in the kid, the system is stalled. But if you see it as the natural next step in learning, and teachers have the freedom and flexibility to look for that learning edge and teach into it, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, and I just have to do this. He always used the example in his introduction to neuroscience class at Columbia. The book is 1,700 pages or something. It's all about the brain. And he always says if you looked at the size of this book, you would think it tells you everything about the brain, and it literally tells you nothing. We don't know 98% about the brain. So it's what we're ignorant of that we're driving for. It's really an interesting book and an interesting juxtaposition of what we know and what we don't know. You'll get a kick out of it, as I hope the listeners will too. Okay, this is cool. What prompted NCTE to move to formative assessment as a position? Was it Common Core? And who should I ask? Scott? What do we do, Scott? We'll give you the hard question. Give Kathy a softball there, Lair.
All right, sure. I think there are lots of reasons.
That's a Kathy question. Wait, is that the Kathy question? Oh. We'll go over to Kathy. Good, Kathy.
All right.
I'm sorry. We'll go to you. We'll give him the hardball one again later. All right, Kathy. Okay, Kathy Fleischer. All right, Common Core. Why now with formative assessment at NCTE?
Okay. Well, formative assessment is not new for NCTE in any way. I mean, there have been lots of statements about formative assessment. There's been lots of research over many, many years about formative assessment. But I think what's going on right now is because there's such a huge emphasis on standardized tests. And let me just push a distinction that Scott made a little bit earlier. So standardized tests are designed to be summative assessments, right, not formative ones. So they're designed to measure or evaluate what students have learned over the whole year or over multiple years. And that's really different from the kind of formative assessment that we're talking about, right? That's the ongoing, everyday assessments, rooted in classroom practice, all that stuff that leads to immediate adjustment. But what's complicated these days is that a lot of testing companies and commercial vendors are now marketing what they call formative assessments. And sometimes they call those through-course assessments. But we claim in the report that these really aren't truly formative assessments. – What they are really is just sort of mini versions of summative assessments. They're not rooted in the classroom moment. They're not designed by teachers. You know, they're not truly focused on particular students in particular settings. So they're more designed as kind of first runs through the same kinds of questions that will eventually be asked on the summative assessment. So there's a lot of language out there right now about formative assessment. And what we talk about in the report is we don't think all of those are necessarily what truly formative assessment is and what years of research on formative assessment has suggested. We don't think that some of those commercial products are necessarily going to help improve student learning in the way that sort of right there in the classroom moment teacher-designed
right.
formative assessment does.
Well, then let me ask Scott this. He's involved in grade 6 to 12, okay? If what Kathy just said is accurate about what's out there in for commercial education products, okay, which I work with all the time, all right, what's a teacher to do? Okay, because a teacher may have some input into the, and you know.
I think I lost you.
I've lost it too.
Okay.
Larry? Scott, you're still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
But Larry has lost us.
Yeah. I'll wait to see if we get an email.
Okay.
Is staying on better than calling back?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Larry? Larry, are you back?
Okay, I'm back too, Kathy.